Welcome to the Lead Defend Podcast, a show designed to help you grow in faith and leadership as you navigate the stages of young adulthood. We address important faith topics and provide practical life tips, helping you build up your faith as you engage a changing culture. Now, here are your hosts.
Hey, this is Ryan and Brock here with Lead Defend. We got Noe Garcia. Noe's been the pastor at North Phoenix Baptist Church for 8 years now. But before that, man, you did a season of college ministry in Fayetteville, Arkansas. So University of Arkansas loves you. And I hope you still love the University of Arkansas.
Oh, man, absolutely. Still rooting for the team.
Dude,
still come back here and hang out. It's hard, but, man, I love the Razorbacks.
Yeah. That's awesome. And got four kids, and, man, loving that life. So
that's right.
Yeah. Now, how old are the kids?
12. 10, 7, 5.
Okay, got the spread. Now, when do they become cheaper? I've got one that's almost
a
year.
You've been asking this question a
lot. I have been asking this question because it's expensive right now paying for daycare.
You only got one.
They don't become cheaper.
Okay, well.
Because then, you know, I have my 12-year-old now has all of a sudden become a sneakerhead.
Oh.
So he wants Jordans. He wants the retros. He wants, I mean,
he does.
So they don't become cheaper, man. They just get, you spend your money differently in different places.
Oh, yeah. So you lead in a lot of aspects. You got to lead your family. Of course, you lead a marriage. You lead a church. You're a leader in your community. Today, we're going to talk about leadership. What is the one principle that kind of usurps everything for you in leadership?
Yeah, man, I would think the one principle that I've learned, just leading college students, leading a church now, is there, I'm wired with a lot of passion and a sense of urgency.
Yeah.
And I move fast, and I'm a visionary, and I want to build things, and I want to reach people. And I think one thing I've learned about the way I'm wired is for a long time, my ministry, been in ministry 20 years, probably for 12 years of my ministry, I would run.
Sure.
Everything I did was with running, with a sense of urgency. But what I recognize is in the midst of me running to accomplish a good goal,
yeah,
I end up unintentionally seeing the people in the church as objects to help me accomplish a goal.
Wow.
Versus the people being the goal themselves.
Hmm.
And so now the people are my mission versus seeing the people as objects to help me accomplish the mission.
Yeah, that's a good word.
And when you look at people as the mission to the Great Commission versus a bunch of objects to help you fulfill the Great Commission, you begin to walk and you no longer run. So the last several years, I found myself still have a sense of urgency, still visionary.
Sure.
But I have found that when I walk with people, I'm actually going much deeper and much further than when I run. Because when I run through the crowds, I miss ministry, I miss depth, and I unintentionally hurt a lot of people.
Yeah.
Because you unintentionally overlook them. You unintentionally see them again as objects.
Yep.
And but when you look at the Gospels, you see Jesus is walking.
Yeah.
And as he's walking, ministry is being done. It just kind of comes to him, right? And I've recognized while I walk now, ministry just comes.
That's a good word.
Yeah. So
you know, I tend to sometimes be task-oriented. Like, I knock things off the list. And sometimes the temptation for me is that people become tasks.
Yep.
Okay, I had this conversation, did this thing, and so I think that's a good statement. But it's not just pastoral ministry. I mean, you're talking about walking with people just in life. And so 16, 18-year-old, yeah, don't just sprint past people. I mean, continue to walk by them.
Yeah, and there's this great danger and temptation to only walk with those that have something to offer you.
Wow.
If we're not careful in ministry, we only invest in those that will give us a return on our investment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And sometimes we overlook people who think, what are they going to offer our ministry or how are they going to benefit me? And if we think they don't, we'll keep running by them.
Yep.
And you just got to be very careful and aware of that.
Now, there's seasons in ministry. You've gone through seasons of ministry, the highs, the lows. How do you continue leading even when things are discouraging?
Oh, man. You know, I've had to lead through depression. I've had to lead through loneliness, led through insecurity, led through just very discouraging seasons. And I think the way you stay faithful in the valley is to remember the call you heard when you're on the mountaintop.
Wow.
And so what I had to do is when I went to North Phoenix, I came out of a college ministry that I loved. Man, I loved it. We had like 1,000 students show up on Wednesday nights. I mean, it was just amazing. I was doing chaplain work for the Razorbacks. Dude, I was living my dream.
Yep. Yeah.
And nobody, as far as I knew, really hated me.
Right? Yeah.
When I began to lead in pastoral ministry, you make decisions that affect the entire church.
Sure.
From preschool to senior adult, which means more opportunity for people not to like you.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm a people person. You know, I cut very easily and I bleed for a long time. So when I went to the church, come from college ministry, where you feel like you're loved, I went because I knew God had called me there. But then I feel like the people hated me. And I was so discouraged and so depressed because my leadership wasn't working.
Yeah.
But I had to keep going back to, I know God called me here.
Wow. Yeah.
I know God called me here. I remember his voice on the mountaintop.
Yeah.
And I'm in the valley now, but I know he called me here.
Yeah. So as you think back on that call, you're reminding yourself, what were some of the changes that you began to make in your leadership as you're seeing where you are then? Because I think a lot of people, they have those blind spots, but not everybody has the self-awareness to see their blind spots. And so how did that kind of process for you, and what were some of the changes that you started to make in your leadership?
Man, that's a great question. I think through walking in the valley, God exposed how self-sufficient I was.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when I came out of building a college ministry, I thought I built it. Like, I really, being transparent with you guys 8.5 years later, I knew God was working, but a big piece of me internally felt like, I know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like me. I'm charismatic. And ego begins to form, and you don't even see it.
Mm.
So when you walk through the valley, walking in the valley was God's grace to me.
Wow.
To break me and expose me of the self-sufficiency. And self-sufficiency is the enemy of ministry.
Mm.
It is. Self-sufficiency is the enemy of ministry. What's different today is that I no longer depend on my skill set and my giftings to build his church.
Wow.
What's changed today is I recognize where he's gifted me. I recognize where I'm weak, but that's not my dependence. Hmm. My dependence is more now on the Holy Spirit and the power of Christ to build his church. Sounds cliche, but it was not my dependence. I truly did not depend on the Spirit of God to move. Hmm. I would maybe ask for it, but my dependence was on this program or strategy that I had.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference today.
And so you're talking about, I mean, you've gone through the hard seasons, and you're not necessarily in that season anymore, but you still reflect back on it, and you remember and recall the lessons from those seasons. What is the tension between moving forward and reflecting on the past in leadership?
Oh, man. There's a lot of tension because there are times where I look back and I'm disappointed with who I was.
Wow.
I really am. I'm disappointed in how immature I was in some areas.
Sure.
And I can't let that. There are some days where it eats me alive.
Yeah.
Gosh, the guilt, the shame, the regret, and the enemy just has a field day with me.
Mm.
And so I have to, where I'm learning is when it comes up, really, I thank God for his grace.
Yeah.
Thank you for not throwing me away.
Mm-hmm.
When I was learning, when I was growing, God, thank you for walking with me and not running past by me.
Yeah.
And so God walked with me through my stuff. And so now the tension is, man, I wish I would have been a better leader.
Mm.
But I don't have to make the same mistakes I made in the past. So how can I talk about these things? And how can I learn from them so I can move forward? I am grateful that I'm not 65 years old thinking, that was 40 years of stupidity.
Wow.
So grateful. I'm looking back and like, and that was 6 years of stupidity. You know, so.
And you're talking about learning from failure. Some folks are so afraid to fail that they don't even try.
Yeah.
And no, that's never been you. You've always been somebody that walked into it regardless of if you were confident in moving forward or not. And so how did you fail forward? Because it's possible to fail and that just wreck a person's life.
Oh, absolutely. Here's where there's freedom. A lot of times when we fail, we want to hide.
Mm.
You see it in the garden, right? The sin comes in. This moment of failure, they hide.
Yep.
You see it with Peter. He denies Christ 3 times. He goes back fishing to what he was doing. We want to go back to the place of comfort.
Yeah.
And so for us, we step into ministry out of our comfort.
Mm-hmm.
When we fail, we want to run back to that place of comfort.
Wow. Right?
And so you run backwards typically because you hide. But what I recognize would set me free, instead of hiding and dismissing that failure and suppressing, is just owning it.
Hmm.
It is amazing when you will verbally and just verbally own that failure to your team, to the church, to people. Mm-hmm. Man, I tried this. I thought it would work, and I'm sorry it didn't.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So let's figure this out.
Yeah. So for like the younger crowds listening to this podcast, in their mind, they might be thinking, all right, I don't want to be afraid to fail, but at the same time, like, if I can avoid it, I would love to avoid it.
Yeah.
So what are maybe some tips if someone was just getting started in leadership? Maybe they're leading in a children's ministry, they're volunteering with a student ministry small group, they're hanging out with students at BCM. What are some good leadership traits that they should be developing, rules in their life that they should be getting started now to maybe avoid some of the failure that others have to go through because they're not thinking about those things?
That is a great question. So now what I do in my life is if there's a vision I have, if there's a certain predicament I'm in, conflict, I go to a mentor or two, mm-hmm. and I process with them out loud. Sometimes we respond off of our emotion, and it gets us in trouble.
Yeah.
And so what I've learned is usually sit on it 24 hours, you make sure my emotions aren't making this decision that I'm going to regret, go to a mentor, flesh it out, and be open and honest with my mentor, whatever it is, and they help me to see the potential roadblocks and the potential areas that are going to be hazardous to my ministry. And so I think now, before I make a decision, I do a lot of processing with mentors. So I think if there's a person who is leading the ministry or wants to start a ministry, I would think that it'll be a very wise thing to go to a mentor or two that's been there and done that, so they can learn the pros and cons of what they're about to walk into. And if they walk into it and for some reason there's an area of failure, own it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you a weak leader. In fact, people are more drawn to those that admit their failures than those that act like they don't have any.
Yeah.
And so just own it.
And it would seem like if you've got a mentor on the front end, if failure happens, you've also got a mentor that's already involved to help pull you out.
100%. 100%. And this is how I learned this.
Yeah.
My mentor said, own it.
Wow.
I mean, people will respect the fact as a leader that you're saying, I tried and I failed and I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I did this to the church Sunday. Talked about a certain issue in our church. Like, we haven't had this program for you and you're hurting. And I'm sorry, church.
Yeah.
I'm your leader and I failed you for the last 8 years. And they received it well.
No, what you're talking about is vulnerability. And I think there's a school of thought out there that would say, as a leader, you just can't be vulnerable with your people. It makes you seem weak. It makes you seem insecure. But you've learned the exact opposite is true.
Yeah.
So why does that thought out there that, hey, leaders just can't be vulnerable? You need to be a little bit separate.
Well, I think it may come from the area of, hey, you don't want to lose credibility.
Sure.
Right.
You don't want to look like you're too human because they'll stop following
you. There's a balance.
There's a balance there. So I think I'm very vulnerable from the pulpit, honestly.
Sure.
I'm just a vulnerable person. I also understand the importance of not telling the world everything, every thought, every... You can't throw your pearls to swine.
Right.
You got to be careful. But I do think it's okay to admit some areas of, hey, I failed in this area when it comes to leadership ministry. Or, hey, I'm not strong at this and I need to get better.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I apologize. And I think that... maybe, I don't know if it's the old school thought of why that has not been okay. I mean, I was actually told, don't do that as a leader.
Sure.
But the truth is, I've seen quite the opposite. That when I've done that, people of all ages in my church have said, hey, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for being open, honest, and real. And I think the gospel does work in raw and authentic places.
Yeah.
If you keep covering it up, how's the gospel supposed to do the work there?
Yeah. So. One of our pastors that we work with, we were talking about preaching and that same thing. And he said, people won't identify most with your victories if you're talking about how great your life is and how good things are going and all the awesome things you've done. What they relate to is more your weaknesses, your failures. That's where people really connect.
Yeah.
No, we've talked about leadership, kind of organization and in a church, leading multiple people. But there's a lot of folks listening to this who God's not given them a large group of people to lead right now. But he has given them themselves in this season to lead into faithfulness and what he's got next. So talk about self-leadership.
Oh,
like, how do you lead yourself and discipline yourself for the task God has ahead?
Look, I have shepherded in 20 years of ministry a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the most difficult heart I've ever had to shepherd is my own.
Wow.
That is the most difficult heart because the heart is so deceiving.
Yeah.
And self-awareness is important. And here's what I believe. When you're shepherding yourself, the best way how to lead yourself is to be following Christ. Because when you follow Christ, you are allowing Christ to shepherd your heart. The greatest leadership I can give myself is to submit myself to the authority and leadership of Christ. Because he will govern my soul. He will convict me. He will call me out. He will expose me. He will do it all. And so in my quiet times, my relationship with Christ as he is leading me I'm following him, but I'm really leading myself, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so that is, I'd say that's the greatest thing someone can have, is to sit down with Christ on a daily basis and allow him to lead their heart. I mean, that and it's difficult.
You know, said something significant, though. I mean, the best leaders follow. I mean, to lead well, you got to follow Jesus well.
Yeah, and I tell my staff this all the time. Be the kind of leader that you would want to follow, mm-hmm. and be the kind of follower that you would want to lead.
No, leadership's not your only passion. One thing working in Fayetteville at the University of Arkansas that I still hear often is, man, when Noe Garcia worked on this campus, he would just office in a coffee shop for days on end, and students would come in, and he would share the gospel with them one after one after one after one after one. And so tell me about that. Tell me about your heart for evangelism real quick.
Oh, gosh, man. It's just, you know, I think you don't have to be an evangelist to have the heart for evangelism.
Yeah.
You know, the Great Commission is for all of us, right? And our hearts should be burdened by the fact that people really are dying and going to hell without Jesus. Mm-hmm. And you got to find your niche. What are you most natural at? Where's your gifting? What area? So when we had small groups in college ministry, they were organic. So we'd have some, literally, we had someone playing on the basketball team.
Yep.
That would, on the road trips, do ministry based off my sermons, and they would do small group ministry there.
Wow.
They had it in the engineering department. We had them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
We went from like 10 to like 60 or 70
back
in a year or two, because we were just organic. So you have to find what works for you.
Yeah.
What is organic for you? For me, it was, I'd sat in the coffee shop. And mm-hmm. yeah, you're right. I'd sat there, and I would probably talk to, I don't even know, 30 to 40 students a week.
Yeah.
A week. They would just come through, and I'd sit in my spot, and over and over and over, we're talking. And it was intentional relationship. It was just very intentional, meeting them where they were at. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was it. I created a safe place for grace.
Yeah,
that they can come to me and confess any sin. And I'm telling them, like, I heard some stuff,
right? Sure.
I don't want to share, but I heard some stuff. But for them to understand that they could receive forgiveness through Christ was mind-blowing for them.
Yeah.
Because they didn't think that Christ can handle their stuff. And so I sat there, and I just became a place of grace for them.
Yeah.
Didn't minimize sin at all, but created space for grace.
How did spending a season in college ministry change the way you lead a church now?
Oh, man. You know what's interesting is I went to this church, my wife and I, in Phoenix. There was about 5 college students there. Grand Canyon University is right up the road.
Sure.
Same distance that Arkansas was to Cross Church.
Yep.
And we took the same principles that we used at C3.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we had like 1,400 students at one point come on a Wednesday night.
Wow.
We went from 5 to 1,400 students.
Wow.
Now we're about 700 right
now. That's awesome.
But it was the same principles.
Yep.
Yeah.
Intentionality. That's it. And discipleship.
Yeah.
Like, students, they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, they are hungry, and they are on fire, and they know no limits for Christ.
Yeah.
They just need someone to help lead them.
That's right.
To help lead their hearts. And so we did that. We created a place to help lead.
Yeah.
Now on Sunday mornings, we went from like 5 students to, I don't even know, we have almost 2,000 college students coming on a Sunday morning.
Wow. Yeah.
That's just
incredible.
College students.
I mean, they're awesome. Just connected to the life of the church.
That's it. And it's multi-generational church.
Yeah.
They're serving everywhere. And they're leading, and they're growing. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's a good thing about young adults, next gen, is most of them are too young to know what they're not supposed to think they can do.
That's right. They don't know any limits.
Yeah.
They don't know limits until we put it on them.
Yeah, that's true. So earlier you were talking to us about discipleship, and you mentioned it there. You know, for the leaders listening, what are some things when you think through when we're discipling those leaders, what are some keys that you think we're missing in that discipleship process as we're not just trying to be leaders, but also hopefully we're trying to raise new leaders?
Yeah, I think there are several things. One is the intentionality of constantly having the eyes of discipleship. And what does that look like? Do we have a system and program? And then two, understanding that every discipleship program is not going to fit every person.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
And so we have to be willing to have organic discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, what I used to do was like, here's a book, we're going to read through it together. That's not horrible, but mm-hmm. that's not what everybody needed at that time.
Especially if they're not a reader.
Especially if they're not a reader. And so you have to be willing to understand every person is cut differently, and it's the way God has wired them, which takes a lot of intentionality to be able to say, when I disciple this person, it looks a lot different than I would disciple this person.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that's something, I think that's why when we try to disciple people, they can often become bored from it.
Wow.
Or they're not growing, or they don't show up sometimes to meet us because they're not excited mm-hmm. to go through this book.
Sure.
I mean, they have areas of life they want to grow and learn, and that's not it right now.
Yeah.
That's maybe next season, yeah. but it's not right now.
Yeah.
So I think intentionality, and number two, it has to be organic. You can't mm-hmm. cookie cut every, you know, everything can't look that's the great. Same for everybody.
That's a good word. Noe, one last word for college students, young adults, listen to the podcast. What would you charge them with?
Oh, man. Listen, I would tell you to totally surrender everything to Christ.
Hmm.
Everything. Do not put limits on where he can call you. Do not give God this boundary of saying God can call me here within the Arkansas limits,
sure,
but he can't call me out here. Mm-hmm. Just do not put limits on him. If you want to see Christ move through your life, and if you want to experience the power of Christ, you have to be willing to live with your suitcase fully open and fully unpacked.
Wow.
And when it's, I tell my church this, my suitcase right now is open, mm-hmm. but it's fully unpacked. I'm trying to bloom where I'm planted.
Sure.
But my suitcase is open because God knows he has my heart.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm not going to zip that thing up.
Yeah.
I belong to you, Christ. Therefore, I've been, you know, I'm from Houston, been to San Francisco, lived there, lived in Nashville, mm-hmm. lived in Arkansas, and now Phoenix. And it's not because I can't find a job. It's because my life belongs to Christ.
Absolutely.
Without limits.
That's absolutely encouraging for some graduates who are thinking, what's next?
Yeah.
Yeah, suitcase open but unpacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. Well, hey, Lead Defend's always around the corner. But until then, this has been Lead Defend.
That's it for this episode of Lead Defend. To hear more episodes from the Lead Defend crew, visit absc.org/podcasts. If you liked what you heard, rate and review us on your favorite podcast listening site. Want to learn more information about the next Lead Defend conference? Visit leaddefend.org.